Good afternoon. Privileged to be here, I think. I knew this day was coming sometime in life. I'd be asked to get up in front of a group of people and give my life story. So, a few things before I start. I just want you to know that I don't really enjoy talking about my life story. And you'll have to bear with me. I could possibly get a little bit emotional over this. There's a lot of stuff in life that wasn't too pleasant. But by the grace and power of God, we'll get through this. So I was talking to Earl Mass the other day, and he said something to me about my life story. Something about it. And then he said that the reality is that all our life stories need to end up the same way. And that's true. At some point in life, we have to all find forgiveness and a place in Jesus Christ. And one other thing I'd like to say is that I'm not the only one with a hard story in life. Not looking for sympathy or pity or anything like that. There'll be a lot of things I won't share, a few things I will. But one thing I've learned in life is not to run from the hard things in life. There's a lot of hard things that come along. There's things that are unfortunate, things that are really just hard. But you'll find out in life that those are some of the best times that God can work in your life. And so, sometimes I hear people, they say they don't want to do that because it's too hard. And naturally speaking, we don't want to do those things. We don't want to go through that. But I think if we allow God to use those things to His honor and glory, it'll be a benefit to us in life. You might have to bear with me a little bit. I'm not much of a writer. The things I wrote down may not be worded just exactly the most easy to understand. I may jump around a little bit and may also, you may have to even read between the lines sometimes. But nevertheless, bear with me a little bit. So we'll start with just the basics. Most of you know, my name's Dustin Nichols. I was born in October of 1976 in Bloomington, Indiana at the Monroe County Hospital to Mike and Beverly Nichols. I had three other siblings, a sister that died 5 days after she was born. My oldest brother's name is Michael. I have a brother Chad and a sister Crystal. And for the first 4 to 6 years of my life, it's hard to remember a lot of that stuff back then. But we lived in Bloomington, Indiana, a small house. And then in about 1980 or 1981, we moved from Bloomington to a little town south of there, Bloomfield, Indiana. Now, the reason we moved there was... I don't know what my dad had did prior to that, before he took this job, but there was a job offered to him, or he applied for a job to work at a coal mine. Now, a lot of people think of coal mines as they think of shaft mining and things like that, where you had to go down under the ground and work. And these weren't those type of coal mines. These were strip coal mining. They actually just ripped the whole top of the earth off, dug the coal up, and then put the earth back on so you weren't necessarily underground. So, there's a few memories I have, I think. The earliest one was I was probably 4 to 5 years old about before we moved to Bloomfield. But I don't remember much before that until about 1982. That's when I started school. Up to this point, started school in 1982, and back then, if my memory serves me correct, I think nowadays when we children go to what they call kindergarten or preschool, whatever you want to call it, is they go for about the last 4 or 5 weeks of school, something like that. But I believe back then I went the entire year. We started in the fall with everybody else, and you went all the way through, got out in the spring, late spring, just like everybody else did. So there's a whole year of school there for me, too, that most people didn't have. So I don't remember much about that preschool, but or first grade. I did remember the teachers were pretty good teachers, and one thing I want to bring out in this is some of the influences in my life. Now, this would have been age, let's say six, I assume, right around six. So I remember some of these teachers in first and second grade, and that very, very kind people, ladies, we were both ladies, and actually all three of them were kindergarten and first and second grade. But it's very kind. That's something that... like I said, I don't remember much, but I knew there wasn't a whole lot of that in our home when I grew up. So it was a blessing to me to go to school. I enjoyed it all the way up until I reached third grade. At third grade, I come to realize that not all the teachers were the same. Not all of them cared about their students. Not all of them cared that the children actually learned anything. And so at about the third grade, it got pretty rough for me in life, I thought. Talk a little bit now about get out of school there. Talk about my home life. So at about second grade, third grade, somewhere in there, that would have put me at somewhere between 7 and 8, somewhere in there, 7 probably. I think it was first or second grade anyway, second or third. Anyway, my mother, she had been home most of the time up to then, I remember. But she took a job. She took a job at a grocery store, an evening job. It was a night position. And I had failed to mention there about my dad and his coal mine job, that it was also a night position. And they both had to go to work at about, I think they usually left between 2:30 and 3 in the afternoon. Well, school didn't get out till 3. So I didn't, when I came home from school, most of my childhood life, there was no one there. I was alone with Excuse me. I was there alone with my brothers. My oldest brother, Michael, at that time he'd been 14 years old, and he was tasked with a job to babysit three younger siblings. So, needless to say, that didn't go too well. I don't know how many 14-year-olds there are in here. Probably not many, but yeah, it just didn't go too well. I think some of that was, we didn't have much teaching when I grew up. We definitely weren't dedicated Christians by any means, or even Bible-believing Christians. In fact, I don't think we even went to church back then. So after a short while, my brother was relieved of his duties as a babysitter, and we were left to ourselves. So we didn't have nobody babysat us. So at the age of, I was 7, I believe, and my sister was 8. I was 7 and she was 6. We were home alone most of the time, so we were free to do about whatever we wanted to. I'm sure Mom at some point had made a list or something that we were supposed to do, but you know how 7, 8-year-old children are. I don't remember what my brother, my second oldest brother, Chad, did. I don't remember much about him in our childhood. I do know that after Michael, my oldest brother wasn't taking care of us or watching us anymore, that he went and got a job. We didn't see much of him after that. So we were home alone most of the time after school until it was bedtime. We were usually supposed to, we fend for ourselves there. We weren't, so nobody was around. Just whatever you could scrounge up is what you ate. And we weren't allowed to use the stove or anything, just the microwave. So as I got a little older, maybe, I was eight, by turning eight, things started to change in the home. It actually got a little bit rougher. Money was in short supply back then, and that's one of the reasons Mom took the job. And so when you got parents that are fighting and siblings that are fighting and money that's in short supply, it was a pretty much tension in our home back then. Dad would, I've seen Dad and Mom mostly on the weekends. We didn't do much with them in the evenings because they both worked the night shift, of course, and then during the days when they were home, they were sleeping or trying to rest up so they could get to work. So I'm going to tell you, this might be the only bad story I'll tell you, but my dad was a very rough man. Very rough. And I remember one time I was sitting beside him and he was watching TV. So I grew up with the TV and the radio and all that. And he was watching TV or something. I'm not exactly sure. I told Steve the other day and I don't remember what I told him he was doing, but might even been sleeping, but I started to talk a little bit and he just rolled over and he said, "Be quiet." So I was quiet for a little while. And I started to talk again. He kind of raised up and he told me to be quiet again. So I kind of hunkered down because I knew it was getting serious. And so I was quiet for a little while longer and then I started talking again. And that set him off. And so he jumped up I was sitting in a little rocking chair and he started kicking me in the stomach. And finally, after a little while, he quit, told me next time to be quiet. So I limped off out of the room into the other room. So my dad was, had a lot of anger in his life. Not exactly sure what all that stemmed back from, but we went through that most of my childhood. I'll tell you a little bit more about my home life as I grew up. Like I said, we children were home alone a lot. And they worked all the time just, to get enough money to get by. But at a very young age, and I'm going to say between the ages, I'm going to say 8 years old because I think six is too young. But back then, a lot of people chewed tobacco, smoked, and things like that. Somewhere around the age of eight, I was introduced to chewing tobacco. My dad had smoked his whole life up until this point. So I was introduced to different types of tobacco, cigarettes from him and chewing tobacco from some others. And at the age of eight, I was addicted to chewing tobacco and cigarettes and things like that. And I carried that sin with me up until I was almost 20 years old. And thankfully, that was taken care of. But I remember as a young boy, you get so hard up for some of these addictions and some of these things that as a little boy, 8, 9 years old, there was a little backwoods country store, just a little store. And back then, and people didn't you could go into one of them stores and tell them you were buying something for your dad, you know, the tobacco or whatever it was. So that's what I do. I'd ride my bike 5 miles from home every now and then to get some tobacco or cigarettes or whatever it was. To feed my habit. And then because we were unsupervised, it wasn't a big deal. You could do that. You could run off and nobody, mom and dad didn't know what you were doing. But anyway, this mom and dad, they actually, I don't know how they did it, but they both, about the same time, I think, actually got day jobs through the summer. By the time I was eight or nine. I have to bear with me on these, you know, the ages, because I don't remember most of that. But so again, we were back to being unsupervised in the summer with nobody around. And at some point in time, does anybody ever heard of the term a huffer? Anybody heard that term? A huffer, that's what we used to call it, or most people called it back when I was growing up. But a huffer is someone that inhales different things. It's kind of like a drug. It wasn't a drug. It was like brake parts cleaner or gas fumes or things like that. People would inhale those things to get high. And about 9 years old, I'd say, for whatever reason, I don't know how it started, but I got hooked on doing that. And I'd be either getting high or intoxicated and different things like that. And did that for years. 3 or 4 years, I believe. And I guess that was one. I guess there was one good thing that came out of that. One day I was doing that, and I was what you call high, you might say. And I had this vision, and this would have been to me. I believe it was the hand of God in my life. It wasn't actually a turning point for me in life, but it was something to start with. But one time I had been doing that, and pretty high. And I had this vision. I was outside. I ain't going to say all the specifics, how it's done and all that. But I was outside, and for whatever reason, I looked up towards the sky, and I seen Jesus walking up this cloud. Clouds were stairs, and Jesus was walking up these clouds, and he kept looking over his shoulder back at me. And so I jumped up. I mean, now this literally happened. I don't know how much I put some stock in it. But, so I jumped up, and he was walking away, and he just kind of kept looking back. And I took out across the field there, and I was running after him, hollering for him to wait. Told him I wanted to go too. But he wouldn't stop. He just looked back, and then he'd turn his head and keep going. And finally he went up into the clouds and was gone. And I remember I fell down in the field there, and I was crying. I wondered why. Why he didn't wait on me. Shortly after that, I thought about it. It's all over. I thought about it that he didn't wait because I was lost. He didn't know me. I wasn't one of his. So that's another, I think that was a pretty dramatic experience I had there. And I'm thankful I had it. Back to my home life, sorry for some of that. I was thankful that, at least in our home, that my mother and father, they never drank alcohol. That was one thing that they didn't do. I didn't have to put up with a drunk father or a drunk mother. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of roughness. My dad knew very little kindness. You didn't talk back to Dad. As I got older, Dad finally quit the coal mine and he went to work for trucking companies. Some different trucking companies. My dad was a diesel mechanic. He worked in all types of garages, different places. And that was another memory, probably a good memory. A good memory of my father, but a bad influence in my life. Along with the tobacco and the huffing and things like that, this was a bad influence in my life. At the age of 10, I think, my dad took these other jobs for small trucking companies. They may have had 8 or 10 trucks. And I'd go along with him some days during the summer. And I'd try and help him what I could at 10 years old. But in these places, in these garages, these trucking companies, there was a lot of pornographic pictures, a lot of photos and filthy mottos all over the walls. And the men in these places, I know it wasn't first nature, but profanity was definitely second nature to most of these men. My dad did use a lot of profanity. But one thing I'm pretty sure I'm just about positive, he didn't have any part as far as in these garages with the smut and the dirty pictures and things that were on the wall. That stuff was, he didn't have nothing in that. But I suppose this is where I learned, if not before, where I learned to all the profanity and things that I learned as a young boy, at the age of, I knew probably more profanity than, I don't know, a lot. Anyway, it was an influence that was very bad in my life. And I'd use profanity just about anywhere. The one place I never used it was around my dad. Now, that man could use it, but if he caught you doing it, you were in big trouble. One thing he didn't do, for whatever reason, it seems kind of contradictory to me as a young man, but he did, but none of us were allowed to. So my dad, I think I said, not a lot of kindness in his life. And one thing I thought as I was growing up, that man was incapable of showing any type of love. I was near, I don't know, my middle 30s, upper 30s, till I ever heard my dad tell me he loved me. And I don't even remember what the incident was in life that he did, but he did say it one time. And that is one word that very seldom is ever formed on the lips of my father. I don't know that I ever heard him tell my mother that. At least, not until later in life. There was a few types of affection I really believe my dad tried to show, but it always come out in the form of abuse. Seems kind of ironic to think about that you could actually associate love with abuse. But I finally figured it out in life that's the only way he could do it. It was interesting. He may, you could always tell when he wasn't mad. When he walked by and he'd just reach out and slap you for no reason. And then he'd walk off laughing about it. Or he'd kick you or whatever it was. And he'd laugh about it. That's the times he knew that he wasn't trying to be mean. He wasn't trying to be unkind. But that's all he knew. So as I went on in life through school, I was growing up, I had a lot of friends. Some come and some went. I was actually in the same school my entire 14 years. Seems like a lot. I was there. But I don't remember anybody ever talking about their parents at school. We never talked about that. That was one thing we kind of kept to ourselves. Didn't talk much about. But one thing I did remember in school was that my friends would start talking about their parents getting divorces. And that kind of scared me a little bit because I had aunts and uncles that had got divorces. And I seen what it did to my cousins, so it always worried me. Sometimes when my mom and dad would fight, mom would say something, I'm going to divorce you or something. And it scared me. That's something I didn't want to go through. And as time went on, I'd hear her say that, and it really kept bothering me. But one thing I'm thankful for is there must have been some type of teaching in my grandparents, because my mother and father never did. I think, not 100% sure. I think they just celebrated their 52nd. Where's my wife at? Let's see. Was it her 52nd? 51 years. So in a society where that was happening everywhere, it was one thing I was thankful for, that it never happened in our home. And because it was a big deal back then when I remember that one of the neighbors got divorced, and it was a hot subject. I mean, it was wrong even back 30 years ago. They looked at it wrong. I remember what it was talking about. So that's one thing I'm thankful for, that I never grew up in a broken home. Now, I grew up in a dysfunctional home. It was a severely dysfunctional home, but it wasn't a broken home. We were all together at the age of, by now, I was 10 years old. My brother had probably moved, my oldest brother was close to moving out. Dad actually told him to leave. Them two didn't get along a lot in life. And for whatever reason, Dad told him to leave, and he did. I had a lot of fond memories of my oldest brother. In fact, I had a better relationship with my oldest brother than I did with my dad. But back to school and some influences. At the age of probably 10, 11, 12-ish, somewhere in there, maybe 13, I don't remember. I got to be friends with some guys that were less than desirable companions. We liked to listen to a lot of rock music and heavy metal and some pretty ungodly music. And we started getting involved and wanted to get involved. So at 13 years old, you can't be in a biker gang. You sure wish you could, or we did back then. But we tried to do those things that they were doing, and there was a lot of wickedness in those things that unfortunately we were taken up in. And another friend I was with, influenced, he was a neighbor boy. We were friends for some years, but along with this bad music and wanting to be in gangs and all the wickedness that was associated with that, we got in the habit of stealing things and different things. We'd walk into stores and take things and all kinds of stuff. And we... was a horrible influence in my life. And some of these things that we were never taught, I don't know. I mean, just in your mind, you kind of know that some of these things are wrong, but you don't really know that you're not supposed to do them, I guess. That sounds odd, but that's kind of the way it was. again, back to my dad and our relationship at this time, it kept growing worse. Seems like when a boy turns about 12, 13 years old, they seem to know everything. And that was... So there was a lot of tension between my father and I, and home life got really rough back then. I'm going to skip most of that, the rest of that here, and move on to better things. But I remember in school, we never talked about the different things that happened. I may have said this already, I'm not sure, but we never talked about the different things that happened in our home life, like the abuse and things. To us, it was common. It wasn't uncommon. Everybody, you knew all your friends were getting, not all of them, but the ones I hung around with at that time, you knew their life wasn't any different than yours. It's pretty rough. It was just part of life. You just accepted it. And yeah. So by now, I'm up about 14 years old, 15, and I think it's somewhere around 14. Been in school, and I never had any good friends that I remember. I had some for a while, but after I got involved with some of these other guys, they kind of faded out of the scene. So most of the influence in my life at that point was all bad. There wasn't a lot of good influence in there. And I do remember I had a counselor. I had to go to the counselor quite a bit. They knew how my home life was because of my older brother. He was in and out of the counselor's office, and they watched. I assume they did. I mean, back then it wasn't such a big deal as it is now. With child abuse and things like that. But I think that's what they were doing. The counselor was trying to figure out how bad it was in our home. But that man was a very kind man. He had a good influence in my life. I remember he took time to stop and talk to me, visit with me. More than that, he was a friend of my oldest brother. And like I said, me and him were pretty good friends. Then there was as I got into my freshman, sophomore year of high school, I got to start picking the classes I liked. Up until this point, I just had to take them. And didn't like school. I'd actually failed sixth grade. So that was a big change for me. I couldn't read. Up until then, I don't know that. I think practice is the only thing that got me through it. But so as these elective classes come up, I started taking classes that I thought I'd enjoy, and one of them was a shop class. And there was a man in there. His name was Gary, the teacher. He was a very straightforward man. He was strict, but very kind. And he cared a lot about people, his students. He wasn't in it just for the money. I had other teachers that would tell me, we're not here to teach you, we're here for the job, okay? So that's for any of you would-be teachers out there, don't do it for the job, okay? But he started to care. And it was good. Things started to get better, but there was a few more incidents in life that shaped my life and maybe even the way I am today. So in school, in those years, things changed, people changed. There was different groups of people. But there was a lot of, I don't know, a lot of people made fun of other people for whatever reason. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure if it was the amount of money we had or didn't have, maybe. But I got made fun of a lot in life. And in fact, it was so bad. I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm not going to say all that I wanted to do or was going to do, but I didn't know what to do with it. So there was two things I would do to try and cope with it is I finally just started telling myself I don't care. I don't care what they say. And just walk on. Deep down, it still hurt, though. Still hurt. And the other thing I would do is, and I wonder if I still do it a little bit today, but when I get when I was in one of those situations and I was uncomfortable and they were making fun of me, the first thing I'd try to do is say something funny to get them to forget about making fun of me and to get them off my back, quit thinking about, leave me alone. And I think even today I kind of do that. When I get uncomfortable, I'll try and say something funny and it'll, it seems like it backfires. But anyway, so it was a lot of ridicule in school as I grew up. I was tormented a lot. And it was rough. Pretty rough. And because of that, I don't know, there was some different types of youth. You were categorized in school, different types. Some of them had money and some didn't. Different names for them. I don't remember all the names. I think some of the ones that had money, they were called yuppies, and then just the middle class, and then there was trash. There was a couple types of trash. There was just plain white trash, and then there was trailer trash. I think in my mind, I considered myself middle class, but everybody else considered me and probably my family as trash. We would actually rank right up there with trailer trash, except for the fact that my dad didn't own a trailer, so you couldn't call somebody trailer trash if he didn't have a house trailer, if you know what I'm talking about. That was a big thing back then. And I went to a school that all the way through the high school and the elementary was all together, and it was an all-white school. I think I do remember there were three black children that come there for a short time, different stages in life, but mostly it was an all-white school. So that had its things. We grew up, probably most of us were racist, biased, probably why that was short-term. But by the time I was 16, I got my driver's license, and life was good then. You know how that is when you get your driver's license, everybody, if things change and everything gets better. I'm going to have to move here. But anyway, we started carousing around. That's what young people did back then. They just drive around town, hang out with friends and things like that, and try to find some kind of acceptance in life with friends, something like that. I guess you might say this is where my journey to Christ really started to take place. So one night me and a friend were cruising around town, we'd parked our cars and we were standing out by the road talking, watching people go by. Doing things like that. Just watching people, that's what we did. So I happened to see this young lady in a car. She stopped and sat there and was just whatever. And I decided I was going to go talk to her. So I walked over and started talking to her a little bit. One of the first things she asked me was, do you go to church? And now before I tell you what I told her, I'll go back to my history of church. Now, like I said, we didn't go to church much. In fact, we knew very little about church. Up to a point, I think my mother did try for a few years to take us to church, but we went very sporadically. I never seen my dad go to a church up until my sister got married, and that was in a church, and that was the first time I ever seen my father in a church. But anyway, so we didn't go to church. I didn't go to church. Never went to church. And once Yeah, like I said, Mom tried once in a while. But hard, very sporadically we went. You know, Easter, you think of Easter and Christmas. Some of those times we go. But anyway, back to this question this young lady asked me if I went to church. And I looked at her and I said, yep, sure do. I sure do. She said, good, so do I. And so we started a relationship together there, started dating, however you want to call it. And we just did what everybody else did. We went to the movies or went out to eat, things like that. Just, and you know, she was always talking to me about church and religion, and she actually sung in a big for church. And anyway, it was good. I thought life was really getting good for me. And then we dated for months, and she would always ask me about every Sunday if I went to church. And I know I had to work. No, I had to do this. Or no, I didn't get to go. It's on and on. And as far as I was concerned, she liked me, and I liked her, and that was as far as it needed to go. I mean, we were just... She didn't really need to know that I wasn't a Christian, or that I didn't go to... In fact, she believed I was. So this went on for a while. In the meantime, there was a man that moved down the road from us. He started up a sawmill. And he needed some help. So I went down and started helping this man. And he had a brother that was Amish. Now, he come from the same background I did. He wasn't born Amish. In fact, he joined the Amish. I think his dad used to be part of... he was in the CIA when John F. Kennedy was president. He did something for John F. Kennedy. But anyway, he got out of that and he moved to Davis County. And he became Amish and the family was with him. And anyway, long story short, I met this man for the first time. Never met an Amish person before. Lived 20 miles from him and didn't know they existed. So I was helping this guy at the sawmill and his brother had come over and we got together and we started talking, started visiting about different things. And one night, or one day, he invited me over. He said, why don't you come over and meet my family? And now, I don't like crowds of people. Didn't then, I don't now. And at about 17 years old, I think, is what I was, 16, 17, that was a big deal to me. I didn't want to do it. For whatever reason, by the grace of God, I did that. I went over, told him I'd come, and I had a nice time. We talked, I met his family, had a nice family, and sure enough, he invited me back the next week. And I thought, wasn't too bad, so I went again. And this went on for a while. And, we started a pretty good friendship there. And, before long, we started studying the Bible, started reading the Bible together, I think. And we'd have devotions and prayer. That's something I never had before when I grew up. And it was neat to me. It was a family that actually cared about each other. People that cared, loved each other, respected each other. So I liked it. That, like I said, that went on for some time, and I was still dating this young lady, and she'd asked me about my Sunday going to church deal, and I'd either make excuses or I'd tell her I went when I didn't. Well, as we started studying the Bible, reading different things, I was ignorant. I was really ignorant to the Bible. I didn't know anything about the Bible. In fact, I could sit down, like when we went to, I used to wear a bill cap, and I'd sit down at the table with him for supper, and with my hat on, never take it off. We'd have devotions and prayer. I never took my hat off. I didn't know. Had no idea. We started reading the Bible, and I started seeing some of these things, and in fact, I started getting convicted about lying. One night, we were visiting. And so it wasn't long. I had to go back to this young lady and tell her that I'm not a Christian, that I've been lying my whole life. Ever since I knew her. This probably 6-9 months went by. And I said, but I'm trying to do better. I'm studying the Bible now and I'm trying to do better. So we kept dating for a while, quite some time, and we dated for a while, and I actually, it's kind of sad, but I actually asked this young lady to marry me. She said yes. And then about that time, it was her spring break, and she was sitting down to see her one of her cousins. And after she'd come back, she told me she wasn't going to marry me no more. And that was pretty hard on me. In fact, that was real hard on me, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me. It was one of the blessings, one of the hardest things I ever went through in life that was the best thing for me. So don't fight those things. Sometimes those things, the hardest things you have to deal with in life are the best things for you. So anyway, that ended, and I kept studying the Bible with this man. And I knew by teaching, some of at least the talk at my home, that you had to be baptized to go to heaven. No. So I started going back to church, for the Church of Christ. And one day I told him I wanted to be baptized. I felt the need to be baptized, and so they baptized me and my sister sometime. And so at this point, I can't tell you that I had that I knew what I was doing completely. But it was a stepping stone in my life. And that happened in June 4th, 1995. And I started helping in that church, doing different things, serving communion and so on, helping with that. And as me and my friend Brad, that was the Amishman's name. So we studied that Bible and read it. I started to get confused. Because what these people were teaching or talking about didn't line up with the Scripture. There wasn't anything that I don't want to say anything. There was a lot of what they taught that didn't line up with Scripture. And so one day I told them, I said, I can't help you with communion anymore. I said, because it's just too serious to do every Sunday. You can't do that. I said, you got to put more thought into it than hounding around through the week and then show up Sunday morning and have communion. I said, this is pretty serious. I said, I think we should think about this. So I told him I couldn't help him with that no more. Anyway, I kept visiting with this Amish guy, and I would go to some of their singings. I never did go to any of their church services because of it was all in German. Anyway, they went through some church struggles, that Amish guy did. I actually moved in with him in the summer and lived with him. And we had Bible studies through the summer and prayer and devotions, you know, about every night. And it was good. It was really good, something I'd never seen before, never done before. But anyway, that church went through some struggles and that man left. And he went down. He moved, switched churches, come to the Mennonite Church there in Davis County, the Mount Joy Mennonite Church. And I went with him. And I don't remember how long we were there, but in August of 1996 is when we went there. That would have been, I got hooked up with the Mennonites there in Davis County. And in the spring of 1997, I was taken in as a member of that church. And so at this point, I've been a member of a Mennonite church since 1997, right at 20 years now. In the spring of 98, I went to Belize and was there a few months. Supposed to stay a little bit longer, but I had just come out of the world and into a Mennonite church and hadn't been with them very long, about a year. And then I asked to go to Belize, and it was all different, all new to me, something was different. I never had anything like that, and it didn't work out real good. And I come home, there was some financial things I had to take care of. I actually had a house that I was trying to sell. Anyway, long story short, but in the fall of 99, I met my wife there at church. She wasn't my wife then, Melody. We started dating, and we dated for I don't know, a couple of years, and we got married in 01. And that's pretty much my story. I don't know. There's a few extra things I'd like to say here. I know it's not a very glamorous story, or maybe wasn't what you had in mind, but a few things I'd like to encourage you on is, like I said a couple times, be careful of your influences. There's a lot of influences out there that you don't even know they're influencing you. Before long, you're tangled up in the wrong thing. Be a good influence. There's a lot of people out there that need help. Try and do that. And then try not to avoid the rough things in life. They're the things that are going to bring you closest to Christ, like it or not. So some of those things that happened in my life were out of my control. I had no control over them. But the things I do have control about, now I really try to watch it. So I'd encourage you to do that. There is things that are out of your control. You can't help where you were born or who your father is or anything like that. But you can accept the challenges that come and deal with them. Don't avoid them because they're going to be a benefit. And I guess one thing one day I was sitting here, just a side note, just be thankful for what you have, because some of us don't have what you have. But I was sitting in church one day, and you know, everybody must have been snow. Scott Schwartzentruber, he sits up here towards the front. And one day his dad walked from the back all the way up here and looked down at him, and Scott scooted over, and he sat down. So, aside from a miracle, that'll never happen in my life. I'll never see my dad do that. So be thankful for your parents, faithful parents. Some of them don't have them. And, some of these things, some of the reapings you get from wrong decisions, wrong choices in life, they affect you pretty far into your life. I still reap some of the consequences of the lack of teaching in my home. There was very little teaching there. So, you know, be careful what you do. Hope that's what you wanted to God. Thanks.